Hey there. Ever feel like you just need a break from the day-to-day of work, put on that out of office, and be alongside peers learning from fellow nonprofits and industry experts on what they see working when it comes to fundraising, marketing, growing a monthly giving program, retention, everything that encompasses what you do? Well, if so, I have two events for you to mark down. June 4th and 5th is Donor Perfect's Community Conference Spark. It is for any fundraiser wanting to excel in donor management, program innovation, community engagement, and organizational growth, and it is free. So click the link in the show notes to register. And then an event that I have attended 3 years in a row is the NEO Summit, combining practical, actionable, and very data-informed content with also this really electric and immersive atmosphere. The NEO Summit is more than just a conference. It is a really fun and great place to get away from your desk and innovate your fundraising and accelerate your impact. So you can join hundreds of your fellow nonprofit professionals in Indianapolis in September on the 18th and 19th, and you can save $600 on your ticket right here. It is the lowest price available anywhere. So click the link in the show notes for both of these events. They are incredible. They put on an incredible speaker presentation, all tons of great resources for you. Invest in yourself and the growth of your organization by attending these two phenomenal events.
Social media and marketing can feel so transactional. And one of my mantras is relationships at the center. I want real relationships with people who care, who are mission driven, who believe in this cause. I'd rather have an influencer with a smaller following who like really cares about this work than a major influencer that's just a quick click. You know, like, I want the real deal.
Hey there, you're listening to the Missions to Movements podcast, and I'm your host, Dana Snyder, digital strategist for nonprofits and founder and CEO of Positive Equation. This show highlights the digital strategies of organizations making a positive impact in the world. Ready to learn the latest trends, actionable tips, and the real stories from behind the feed? Let's transform your mission into a movement. Hello, everyone. Hello, listeners. I was just laughing with Maggie because she's connecting to us here from Nepal, and the internet was out and the power was out. They were coming back in. So this is like as what I like to call as real and raw as you get it to talk about marketing efforts for Blink Now. And Maggie Doyne is the co-founder and CEO of the Blink Now Foundation, and something I'm very excited to chat with you about, also an author of Between the Mountain and the Sky, A Mother's Story of Love, Loss, Healing, and Hope. Maggie, your story is incredible. And I think our personal stories power so much of just connecting and building relationships. And that's how we connect with each other, is just through shared experiences and telling those stories. And I think why we connected is I was looking for stories around marketing and social media. And you're like, hey, like, we've done a lot on social media. We could chat about what we've done. And so welcome to Missions to Movements. I'm so excited to chat with you.
Oh, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Of course. Of course.
Like the nonprofit sector in general, a lot of times can get left out of the conversation around marketing. It's not something that we talk about as much. And so I'm excited to chat about it.
Yes. Okay. Well, let's dive right in. Let's do it. You personally have quite a social following, and so does the organization that you founded. How did that start? And I'm speaking specifically on Instagram, because that's what I was looking at the most on. When you give us a little bit of a backstory of Blink Now and how social ended up like being integrated into what you do.
Blink Now started about 17 years ago. I'm 36. I moved to Nepal when I was 18, going on 19. And so kind of like at the era, I feel like when I was going into college, like my peer group, yeah, Facebook was like just coming out. It was this new unknown thing. And at that time in my life, I ended up taking a gap year and was traveling and ended up working and kind of falling into the development world after just working with the Nepali refugee community and deciding to come to Nepal and live in Nepal with my co-founder. And so I think in the initial days and in the beginning of kind of our journey, we were in a very war-torn, very poverty-stricken region that was very, it is and was, especially at that time, extremely remote. And the challenge for me as a girl from suburban New Jersey was, how do we make people care about the orphan crisis that we're in, about a war-torn region, about infant and maternal mortality, and about this region of the world that I have come to love so much, but that is struggling as well. We were working in community development, and I saw my role very crystal clear. Like, it's my job to bring in resources because this is clearly a region of the world that is struggling with massive underinvestment. And in the beginning days, it was like, how do we share this story and how do we leverage this storytelling for impact? But this was like such an unknown territory at the time. And I feel like in philanthropy and in the nonprofit sector in general, there's this massive gap where people donate or they give to a cause that they believe in, but they don't get like the feel good. Like, it's become very transactional. For a charity, like maybe you donate to your friend that's running in their marathon for a cause, or this foundation, or you contribute to a birthday fundraiser, but you don't actually get to see, live, breathe, taste, touch, feel like what that is doing for the rest of the human family. I mean, people can go and they can volunteer in food banks, but especially in international development, you're kind of giving and having no idea where it goes. And so that kind of became one of my early missions, is to connect children, young people, real people to other real people and get these communities more connected.
Yeah.
And so we tried to leverage storytelling and social media. And initially it was like blogging, because there was no Instagram, TikTok, Facebook. And that's kind of how it began, with using media and storytelling to create action and getting people to care. You know, like the first story that broke for us was Cosmo Girl magazine and then Glamour. It was like a story on selling Maybelline makeup.
Wait, what's the connection of that? And yeah, you have to explain that connection.
Oh, so, you know, like it was like Cosmo Girl of the Year. And it was a competition that we won, I won. And it was for young people, young girls, like making a difference in the world. And we won that. And instead of just telling the story, because it was the year 2008, instead of just like telling the story of like, wow, this is meaningful and it matters and you can change the world, the story was about how I had to get a Maybelline makeover. And it was like showing the makeup that I wore for the makeover. And it was frustrating in the beginning. But then when that story broke and you realize that, oh, people really care about the story and not just the Maybelline makeover, we kind of used that and then used other kind of media to tell the story, always with the goal of turning that into impact and actual change and then connecting people to the change that was happening.
Did you notice certain stories that you would tell on social had a greater impact than others?
So at the time, again, like the charity world and the philanthropy world is a constant evolution. But at the time, one thing that bothered me was that poverty stories were very much like this clickbaity, like sad child covered in flies and hungry and tears rolling down the cheeks. And what I saw was very different. I saw joy. I saw kids that were very much like dreaming big dreams and communities that knew the solutions and the answers to the issues that they were entrenched in. And so I kind of, from a marketing perspective, orphanages are like these dark, dismal, terrible places. And I felt like the whole sector needed to be more about joy and laughter. And like, I wanted to create kind of a vibe of the joy of children and the possibility and the potential. And so we tried to take a very different approach. I mean, obviously you want to share the real awful, tragic stories, but for children in general, they also have to be protected. And mm-hmm. there was a very fine line of like telling these stories that were very like heart-wrenching and sad so that people realize that, yeah, we have to make a difference. We need to be involved, but also showing the joy and the possibility and protecting the innocence of children and not crossing a line into like exploitation. And that was hard in the beginning. I didn't always get it right, but I wanted to do things differently. And I wanted our children to be portrayed in a way that would make them proud and also protect them.
Yeah. And to back up a little bit, share a little bit about what does Blink Now do specifically? And based on that, how did you come up with basically like your social media strategy, your approach? I'm sure that has definitely shifted in 17 years. So, but maybe talk about like maybe what it was at the beginning and then maybe now what you've learned and focus on.
Yeah. So we work in the sector of orphan care and we have Women's Empowerment Center. We have a beautiful full service community school that serves, you know, the most marginalized underprivileged children. We have a food and farming initiatives. We have safe homes for at-risk girls and children. We started by kind of trying to reimagine what schools could be and what residential homes could be for children. Because as you know, foster care and orphan care is very broken. And so we tried to reimagine that. And I'd say like our social media strategy that evolved, because in the beginning we didn't even have social media, was to show supporters, donors, the power of like $5. That $5 could be a child's enrollment into school, that $5 could be a child's first pair of soccer cleats on their first soccer game, that 25 cents could be a plate of nutritious food and a school lunch. And I think it was about connecting people to real problems because we didn't grow up with seeing media, for better or worse. We didn't grow up with seeing the hardship, the pain, the suffering, the violence, the extreme struggles of the world in front of us.
Right.
And I mean, we could argue that that was a good thing for our mental health.
Yeah. Yeah. I honestly think the first thing that I remember, but I didn't fully comprehend it, was at 9/11.
Yes.
I think we're very similar in age. So I was in seventh grade when that happened. And I remember watching it happened on TV, but I fully didn't comprehend, right, as a seventh grader, what was actually happening. But yeah, you're right. We didn't, because we didn't have the internet as it is now or access to cell phones in the palm of our hands. You're right.
Yeah. And in a way, we didn't see violence like constantly, and we didn't see human suffering constantly. We were less aware, you know. I mean, for me, we didn't even grow up with the television in our house or the news blaring. So in a way, like we were probably less aware than today's generation of young people. Again, for better or worse, we don't know. So entering kind of the space of international development as a young person, I felt like I would have lived my life differently had I known that there were five-year-old children breaking rocks on a riverbed instead of going to school. Had I known that kids truly didn't have food to eat, had I known that every girl's wish in rural Nepal was just a chance at an education. And so I feel like I really wanted to tell that story to the greater world, to the folks in Kathmandu that weren't seeing it, and in a way that was hopeful and inspiring and inspired us all to take action, because taking action really matters. And that was the beginning of our social media strategy.
I mean, at the time, was it, did you do a focus more on video and photos or certain platforms over others?
Honestly, we evolved as like, I feel like even now, like it's an evolution and you have to change your strategies and you have to stay on top of it. And I think we were lucky being so young because we were adaptable and we were changing with the times. We were like looking at, okay, Facebook versus Insta versus Twitter versus who is our audience, who's actually following our content. Mm-hmm. And then you have to change based on what you're going through and what the needs are and also what's happening in the space in general. And it's been going like Zoom rocket ship fast, like what'll work for you one month literally will not work for you the next month. So I think for us as an organization, as a nonprofit, one, we have to run with very little resources. We don't have capital to invest in marketing. There are very few donors that are going to look at you and be like, I want to invest in your marketing strategy and in your social media algorithms, right? Like, so you have to be very creative, very resourceful as a nonprofit and make a little bit go a very long way. And like, I'd say one thing that's changed are the algorithms for, especially for nonprofits. Like, it's just harder to break through that space. And then videos, you have to get on board with videos right now. And luckily I married a cinematographer and movie like guy that's really into that.
Hey, me too. You very, did. Very convenient. I did.
But yeah, I think finding your way in the space is just about like, oh, this is working really well. Let's keep doing it. Oh, this isn't working anymore. Let's try something else.
I mean, yeah, being able to pivot. Do you think there's been a connection between, you have a pretty good social following base, between your social following growing and seeing donors increase?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think when people are engaged and when they feel part of something, I think our Blink Now family, our Blink Now supporters, like when there's a call to action, they're there, they're ready, they're educated, they are following along through different ways. And then when there's an opportunity to get involved, we've seen time and time again, they're right there. Like on Mother's That's Day, awesome. One of my kids, I run a children's home with 78 children. One of my kids was born without ears and he needs a cochlear implant and a sort of bridge, a major surgery. And the equipment's not available in Nepal. It's available in Australia. It was going to cost $14,000. And so for Mother's Day, we just put out a Mother's Day ask of like, hey, for Mother's Day, what we want more than anything is this. And then people are right there. Like, they just want to make it happen. Valentine's Day campaign, crowdfunding. We needed a school bus. And everybody just like comes together. And you've seen that too, right? And
yeah,
like all over, this crowdfunding to me is just such a phenomenon. Like there's a need and people are right there ready to help.
Hope you're enjoying this episode. Wanted to let you know that applications are now open for my monthly giving mastermind program starting in January. Ready to build a dedicated community of recurring donors to generate consistent revenue? By March, you'll have a program ready to go live. Let's make it happen together. Head on over to positiveequation.com/mastermind to learn more and apply. Can you like in a real, because I think this is such a good case study. So for the Mother's Day campaign, for instance, right, you had this very specific need. How did you display that and share that on, I guess, share what channels did you share it on? What type of content did you share about that? What was your kind of digital social plan to get that campaign out there?
Yeah, so we used a newsletter and an email subscription and we leveraged social media, so kind of multi-tracked. And we told the story of Dave, our child, our kiddo, who loves to play soccer, loves music. We shared his favorite song by Imagine Dragons, that he was a star student, but that he was struggling because he wasn't able to hear. It was just real and raw and authentic. And I think most of our campaigns that have resonated the most of our viral videos were raw, real, authentic, and expressed like a very specific need. And this is the difference that you are going to make. And this is why your 100, your 1,000, your 100,000 matters.
Yeah, I love that. And I think something compelling, you kind of started about the beginning and then you just talked about with the Imagine Dragon song, is developing content that allow people to use all of their senses to experience what you're talking about, even though they can't be there, right? I can hear that song, right? You can picture playing soccer, right? And all of those different things. So I think that's really powerful. You talked a little bit about when people are engaged. Talk a little about what does your team now look like for digital and social? And do you have an engagement strategy to respond and engage with people proactively online?
Yeah, we're trying. One thing that's been really cool this year is that our alumni, like the kids who have graduated from the school, have grown up in the home. You know, they're in college, they're graduating from college, they're taking internships, they're part of the alumni association. So they're coming and it's like a volunteer opportunity that we can offer to folks or an internship. Obviously, we pay all of our interns and volunteers and everything that we can, but it's a great way to engage young people. And as a nonprofit, I would say that's a benefit, right? Like, people want to give back, they want to volunteer their time. So yes, we'll use volunteers, interns.
So do you have anybody on your staff that is in charge of like digital social?
We do. We have a communications head who's okay. running a lot of our social and our comms. Yeah. Yeah, we do. We have a couple volunteers also helping respond to comments and engage. Yeah.
And engage back. Okay. How was it to hire her and find the comms role? Like, what did you look for when you were looking to hire for that person?
Yeah. So for me personally, I'm looking for like a catch-all, someone who can do a little bit of design, who knows like back-end, is digitally savvy, can do a website, is a good writer, who understands the social media world, and who has a good heart and cares. And I've had a really, really good comms team. We're small, mighty, and fierce. And I also have like very strong opinions about, you know, protecting the kids and ethical storytelling. So someone who gets that, who understands the sensitivity around it. And yeah, Lindsay was with us for, gosh, 4 years. And Patty actually was here on the ground as well. And she's really helped us tremendously. We've had some folks kind of here on the ground and then also kind of transferring back to the US where our foundation is based.
Do they schedule content creation days? Or how do you configure exactly, okay, what are we going to be sharing this month or this week?
Yeah, so they're doing an annual plan with monthly, weekly, there's even daily posts. Like my co-founder's name is Tope. So there's a day that's Tuesdays with Tope, Mondays with Maggie, Sustainability Sunday, Women's Center Wednesday, according to the program. And then they're also looking at things like International Day of the Girl, which was last week.
Right.
And we launched a video for International Day of the Girl on Instagram. It got 300,000 views. It was
amazing.
It was awesome. It was about exploitation and the challenges of girls around the world and what we can do to change their futures and the narrative. It was hopeful. It was inspiring. It was also a little bit jarring in the beginning. So yeah, we're looking at days like that for us, for the charity world, anchoring around things like Giving Tuesday. Huge, huge, huge. Like every nonprofit and every organization, every company should be looking at their CSR plans for Giving Tuesday. It's the global day for giving around the world. It's the number one day for charitable giving. And it kind of launches the charitable season, which for us is in November and December.
So I want to go back real quick to the video piece that got 300,000 views. Some organizations are probably like, what? Like, how in the world did that happen? What do you think it was? And I'll link to it in the show notes. Was that 300,000 views on Instagram?
Instagram. Yeah. So because we are based in Nepal, we have a lot of Nepali influencers and we've had to run major campaigns like COVID crises, migrant crises, you know, massive humanitarian aid endeavors. And so through that, we've built up some influencer networks. So often when we have a video campaign coming out, we'll let our list of folks know, like, hey, this campaign is here. It's the call for action for girls. So for Nepali female influencers, for our US or international influencers, it's a great way for them to use their platforms and spread awareness. So yes, we're able to leverage influencers that way. And I think during moments like that, where we have a clear call to action and a fundraising plan for this, we were looking to raise money for our safe home for at-risk girls. It's really just a good kind of rally call with a specific ask. And then getting influencers to see that, hey, if you can help us promote this video, or we'll even throw in a couple hundred dollars of just boost to help boost the algorithm. And we're trying to use our social media strategy, like dollars that way.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you did some paid social spend. Did you see, so from a video that went quote unquote viral, did you see donations trickle in from that response for the safe home?
Yes. So we did raise money that day. It actually just happened last week. So yeah, we raised money for the safe home. We raised awareness. It's interesting though, like some of the viral videos and the media will raise money and some will raise followers. and some don't. And you don't really know like why, but I do think you need like a very clear call to action and a clear ask. And like you have to ask yourself, is this a PSA? Am I looking to like raise awareness about the issues facing girls? Am I looking to raise money? Like, who's my audience? Who am I appealing to? So for our email, for example, we use that as an opportunity to thank our donors, to say, because of you, these 28 girls have had a safe place to live at the most difficult time in their lives. And for our influencers, we were like, this is an important global issue. Can you help us raise awareness? But sometimes when we're looking to raise money, we'll need to be really clear, like, we've got a $20,000 match. Can you help us match the 20? You know, for the next 24 hours, your donation will be doubled. And really, matches are also really, really important and really good to leverage.
Yes. I love that you have this influencer group. How did you curate that together?
I think our influencer community, the Nepali diaspora, our influencers around the world, like we've built trust and relationships with them. They've seen us at the front lines. They've seen us putting it all out there. They've seen us doing work that is really vitally important and is important to them, and what their values are. And I think we take time to get to know them and to also share what they're passionate about. And like, I try to always share their videos because I think they're up to really cool things. So social media and marketing can feel so transactional. And one of my mantras is relationships at the center. I want real relationships with people who care, who are mission driven, who believe in this cause. I'd rather have an influencer with a smaller following who like really cares about this work than a major influencer that's just a quick click or like looking
absolutely
buck, you know, like I want the real deal. And so for us, like our influencers are generally Nepali women and others. We have amazing celebrities, like we have Mark Duplass, but they're people who really, really care about our work and children specifically.
That's amazing. This actually brings me back to, for listeners, I think this is a really great takeaway for to just have kind of this ambassador list kind of on call for important things to amplify for you. And this is kind of a tactical note, listener, if you want to write it down. Years ago, when I first started my company, I worked with an organization called Unseen, and they're trying to end human trafficking. And they're in, oh my goodness, I don't remember if they were in South Dakota or North Dakota, but they do work all over. And we wanted to do this. They had a campaign coming up. And I said, there's probably influential people that follow you on social, but they just haven't been directly asked to share what it is that you're doing. So I combed through their followers. And I think anybody that had, it wasn't a lot, 2,500 followers or up, and made a list. And I had a like a DM script that I created, and I reached out. And the ask wasn't to give. The ask was, you already follow us. We love that you're a supporter. We're going to have this campaign coming up in a couple weeks with this piece of content. When we share it, would you mind amplifying and sharing it on your channel? And we wanted, I think, I don't remember how many like of those sent out, maybe like 20. And I think majority, like 90% said, yeah, of course. And then they did, and they shared it out. And remember, we saw the our amount of followers skyrocket on that day, website traffic. So like, this is such a brilliant thing that is free to ask to do. So thank you so much for sparking that. And it's such a beautiful way for people to also help when it doesn't at all feel transactional. And they're already saying, I already support you. I already follow you. I'm happy to share the mission about what you do. I think that was awesome. I wanted to ask you just one more thing about, and I want everyone to go visit your Instagram. Would you say Instagram is primarily where you focus most of your social strategy?
And Facebook, but mostly a lot of Instagram. Yeah. Blinknow.org. And I'm Maggie Doyne. So blinknow.org is a good place to.
Yeah. So go check out both of their accounts. What do you think hasn't worked when it comes to marketing and messaging on social media? Have you ever seen something that's just like tanked?
Oh my gosh. So many posts. I mean, if you start to track the algorithms, it can actually be so depressing because like really good, what I think is like, oh, this is so cool. Like, it's sustainability and it's pictures of kids. Anytime we try to be serious or like, I don't know. It's like
a silly
video of like a kid playing with a baby cow will do incredible, or like a puppy content or just like kids being ridiculous, like funny and cute and dancing. It'll do great.
But I think it goes back to, I think that's such a great point, because think about our own use of the platforms and where we go on them. Like, we want to be entertained. Instagram for sure is like, we get in a scroll trap and we want to watch those funny videos on repeat. And I think a lot of times, I think your point about showing the joy of what you do is so powerful, because with so many of these organizations, they might say, well, what do I share if everything can seem negative or sad?
Yeah.
And you're putting a twist on it to share the joyous moments. And I think what you're saying is so true. I remember going to the Dominican Republic and doing mission work, and the kids were living in homes. They didn't have floors. It was dirt. And there was 9 of them in a room, but they were so happy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There was no difference. They were loved by their family and they were playing. And it's like showcasing, there is like beautiful joy in that.
Yeah. I mean, I think, why do people go to Instagram? Like, why do I go to Instagram? Yes, I want to be educated, but I work 18 hours a day. I see a lot of intensity. This work is hard and I have 2 little kids. Sometimes I just want relief and like a release. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't want to always doom scroll. Like, and especially for me, like my everyday is so intense and so deep. And sometimes like I do just want to feel joy and lightness and that there's good in the world. I get that that's a privilege too. But I do think we kind of have to remember why people are going to these pages. And
yes.
And yeah, like that they're a part of something good and what we do matters.
I remember during COVID, it was in New York City, where at every time they would do, like people would bang their pots and pans to like, in honor of celebrating people on the front lines and healthcare workers. And those were videos going viral. It was like people building relationships across their balconies, right? And like, having conversations.
Yeah.
And those are the types of content that's so powerful. I love that.
Yeah. I always say, like, also be what we are. Like, we are not the UN. Don't try to be like somebody else. Like, we're not Save the Children. We're not Big Aid. We're not the Red Cross. Like, we will never be that. We're just a small little, big, like, what we do, Matt. But, like, I used to think that like, oh, I wish I could be more like them. Like, their content is so curated and professional. And what I've learned over the years is like, people like us because we're just us and we're real and it's messy and it's imperfect. And you can look through the algorithms. It proves that. Like, every time it's like a serious
I love work. That. It's like really getting out of the comparison mentality and embracing the imperfections.
Exactly.
Because that's what makes somebody want to be around. I love that so much. I'm writing it down. Maggie, this has been a joy talking to you. Maggie has been up for however long. It's, what is it, 9, almost 10 p.m. her time.
It's all good. It's all good.
It's a joy speaking with you. Everyone, please go check out her book. We're going to have to do a separate conversation to talk about your memoir and like the writing of that and becoming an author. And that's a whole other thing of talking about telling your story. I'd like to wrap with an ask and receive moment. What is one thing that you would like to ask for help or support on from listeners?
Oh, follow us at blinknow.org and get involved. Yeah. Sharing, posting, following along.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Love it. And then where can listeners connect with you? On Instagram, probably.
Yeah. Follow us on Insta. Our website is blinknow.org.
Awesome. Beautiful. Maggie, thank you so much for being here. I hope everyone go follow their channels, get inspired, and reach out to her. And again, just thank you so much for everything that you're doing. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. Thanks. This was fun.
Can you tell I love talking all things digital? To make this show better, I'd be so grateful for your feedback. Leave a review, take a screenshot of this episode, share it on Instagram stories, and tag Positive Equation with one E
so I can reshare and connect with you.